Noon Vancouver, it's the Orca Man here, and I hope that you enjoyed this past weekend as much as I did. I know I'm doing my best to go out and see as much of both the city and BC as I can. One of the places that I've recently gone to is the Royal BC Museum in Victoria. Now, they currently have one of my favorite exhibits to have ever existed called Orcas, Our Shared Future. I went a couple weeks ago with my friend Kendra Nelson. It was the third time going, but we were able to go to the exhibit, which is going to be open until March 31st, and go see a documentary extended cut of the film Saving Luna, which is absolutely wonderful. If you haven't seen it, be sure to go out and take a look, whether or not that be at the BC Royal Museum or just on your local streaming service. For today's broadcast, I and Kendra go on to the Breaching Extinction Bot podcast to talk with Erica Worth about our experiences going through the museum, things we enjoyed, things that, as orca enthusiasts, we picked up on throughout the exhibit. That was quite interesting. So without further ado, I'm going to let Erica take it away.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Breaching Extinction podcast. Hope you guys all had a wonderful couple of weeks. I am here with Kendra Nelson, who I hope you guys know by now, and Fred Dinesco, aka Orca Man, who has been on the podcast multiple times and is a TikTok star. He's hashtag famous. They're both hashtag influencers. Fame, millennials, gang gang. Okay, how's it going, guys?
Delightful.
Good.
Delightful. Was that, did you, Kendra, you're like, God damn it, Erica.
Take that influencer word out of your mouth.
Me or Fred are millennials either.
No.
You're Gen Zers? You guys are babies?
I'm like right at the end of millennial to Gen Z. I'm in like the weird gap, basically.
How old are you?
I'm 23.
23. Okay.
I just turned 23.
Wow. Okay,
so we're the same.
Yeah. Like I turned 23, like, yeah.
Couple days ago.
Yep.
I turned 24 this year, so I'm older than Fred.
Nice.
Ooh.
Are you, wait, does that make you a Pisces? No, that makes you Aquarius.
Yep.
Nice. I was gonna say, have you heard the song Killer Whale by Andrew Nicolay or whatever his name is? And he's like, I'm a Pisces, but I'd rather be a killer whale. That could be you.
I think I have heard that song.
It could have been you, but you're an Aquarius. Wow. Okay. Gen Zers. Hashtag not millennials. Amazing. But they just took a fun little trip over.
Facts over feelings.
Facts over feelings. Alternative facts right here. I was presenting alternative facts and I apologize for that. But they just went to the Royal Museum in BC that had an exhibit about the Southern Residents. And so they're going to tell us about it. So how was your trip, guys? What did you see?
So to start off with, like, I posted, I think it actually was built upon the fact that Saving Luna was also playing as well. Saving Luna is a film that came out like 2011, like super early. I don't know. It was playing at the IMAX there. But Kendra, you were there like two times before, right?
Yeah, I've been three times.
That's wild. That's wild. That's, I know, when I first went, I was surprised, like, it wasn't, it's not actually just about the Southern Residents. It's pretty expansive with regard to, like, killer whales in general. Like, it's like orcas are shared future, but they try to do it as a species as much as possible. They'll speak to a lot of the Southern Residents, and I'm pretty sure that they have a, do they have a wall of Southern Residents there?
They had a, most of the, like, physical exhibit portions were of Southern Residents. They had four different panels that were Southern Resident focused, so naming of the pods, mother and calves, and there's one other one I can't remember what it was, and then the focus on captivity was obviously on mostly Southern Residents, since it's mostly Southerns from the PNW that were captured, plus some Northern Residents and a couple transients.
Especially they focused a lot on the early stages of it rather than any of the recent stuff, I want to say. Like they focused on, like,
it was
the early
just focused histories on the Pacific Northwest history of captivity, which ended in the 70s.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was trying to unmute myself. My neighbor's kid, like, runs across my ceiling and ruins everything for me and wakes me up constantly. It's running right now, so I'm like trying not to let it pick up. Okay, so they talked about like the history of captivity. Was that as like far as the history went, or did they go back at all into like, you know, like pre-colonial history of the orcas in the Pacific Northwest?
I think that was actually one of my favorite parts, is that the way that they like set it up, actually, they had an indigenous section. I'm pretty sure right after the first, like you walk in and there's the beginning that has like your basic information. Where are killer whales? What are killer whales? And then you walk into a section that is like has the life-size models of three different ones. So big bull, a mother and a calf. And then either the section after that or the one right after, whatever one is like starting the storyline of human relationships with orcas, it begins with indigenous stories.
That's definitely really important. That's awesome.
No, it's well done. It was incredibly well done in terms of the like the way that they properly set that up.
Nice. Okay, so was it more of like a timeline of like they're like, okay, here we start with this, and then they go into the captivity era, and then what like current issues they face?
Yeah, pretty much exactly that. I want to think.
Okay.
As far as I can remember it.
Yeah, after the science section, that's basically what it goes into.
Cool. Mm-hmm. So was it like mostly posters that they had, or like did they have like different artifacts?
Lots of artifacts. So you walk in and there is a big killer whale totem in the front like room, I guess, as you're walking through the big whale tail. Yes. And then it's posters all over the wall for the first section until you get to the life-size statues, not statues,
yeah,
dioramas of J1, J2, and J51. And then there's posters all around them, and right around J1, there's there are screens projecting like kelp forest and fish all around it, so you're like swimming with them. And then there's a little like interactive part that we played where you have to pick a sound and if it's a killer whale call or if it's something else, so like a balloon or kitten cries, trying to like have people differentiate the calls. And then you go into the second room, which is where they have Rhapsody or J34, J32, skeleton and her calf right underneath her. So both of their skeletons are on display. And then an interactive media table. So it's a giant screen and you get to click on it.
The table is one of the coolest things of the whole exhibit, I'd say.
Yeah, you click on it and it'll show you like the muscle structure of killer whales, the bone structure, the nervous system, and then put their skin on. And you can like mess around with that. And then it had some stuff about echolocation, about hunting and whatnot. And then there is a movie about Orca Lab in that room. So you can sit down and watch a little film about Orca Lab up in BC. Then you go into the indigenous people's room, and it has a lot of artifacts. There's like a solid gold killer whale totem, there's a killer whale mask, there's a lot in that room. There's a lot of different artifacts in that one. There's a big painting, there's another movie in that one. It's like an animated film about, it's confusing, I don't know if it's about the origin of a killer whale or just some lore. It doesn't have like any speaking in it. So you kind of are just watching it. It's really pretty and it's really cool. I don't know if you watched it, Fred.
Not all the way through, at least.
Okay. We watched it the first time we saw it, and it's really cute and it's really, really cool. I just couldn't tell if it was like an origin story or if it's just like some kind of lore and myth, because the sign next to it basically just says the name of it and the director, not the director, like the animator and who made it. And then you get into the captivity section where there's, again, a lot of artifacts. Like old Marineland uniforms and a blackfish poster and a copy of the deed for, was it Namu?
Yep.
Like the
that's purchase, crazy.
Basically.
Yeah, the purchase sale for the $8,000 for the first killer whale that was ever like money was exchanged for.
Yeah.
Which is fucking wild.
Yeah.
That's like, I feel like that probably brings a whole nother level of like realness to the situation of like looking at it and being like this, like, cause you hear about history and then you're like looking at it and you're like, whoa, that's.
Yeah. It was a receipt for a whale. And yeah, a lot of old like SeaWorld like gimmick, like a hat and t-shirts. They had like the iconic plastic cup that is the whales like jumping off. They're like my favorite cup ever at SeaWorld. I'm literally like, when we went in 2017 or something, mm-hmm. I was like, we're buying that. It doesn't look as good as the old ones now. They suck now. But it was like the classic old one. And I was like, I'd pay money for that. I'm so upset we sold ours because we had like several. And then there's a movie about the Pen Cove captures, primarily Pen Cove. They also get into just like the northern resident side of things, which was in BC. Pen Cove is in Washington. Mm-hmm. And they have like a mural of photos from Sealand. And it's all focused on the Canada side of things. There's less focus on the like Washington side. Mm-hmm. And then on current captivity, there was a picture of Tillicum in that.
And then he was on, I'm pretty sure Tillicum was also like the famous, they had like a famous whales lineup.
Yeah,
he like was famous on that. Was it famous whales or famous captive whales? I might have just
been famous captive whales. So it started with, they had Namu, it had like Tokite, and Moby it Doll. Had Tillicum. It had a bunch.
Yeah.
And then you get into the final room, which was like the conservation takeaways. and then there's a little video about Morgan. So you can learn about Morgan. Yeah. And like Ingrid Visser and Dr. Marino.
Yep.
Okay. Cool.
That's the walkthrough. Imagine it.
We did the walkthrough. Nice. I think that's helpful. It really like sets us up. I definitely think the coolest part sounds like the one with the skeleton.
That room was really cool.
I know for a lot of people, I was talking to someone who kind of wanted to go, but wasn't sure because they knew, saw Rhapsody, and so seeing Rhapsody's skeleton and her calf skeleton would obviously be very hard for a lot of people, but it is super cool. I think I like seeing skeletons, like,
for sure.
I'm in the camp of, I think SeaWorld should have done more with their whale skeletons instead of just dumping their whales into like
the dump. That's a really good point. I've never even thought about that.
A couple of them have been researched now, so like Sokka and Kiara were I don't know if you call it donated to research, but some of their like blubber samples, I think blood samples, were evaluated to see if captive whales are polluted like wild whales.
Wow. In a study.
Interesting.
But past that, there was a rumor that Tillicum skeleton was going to be displayed at some point. It was not.
Shit. That's
I still think that it is controversial because people are like, oh, it's disrespectful. I think it's disrespectful to throw them out. Like at least maybe have like a cool something so people can like see the size.
I feel like it would be more controversial because he like killed people.
No, but you can do that well though, because you can tell this, you can tell a story.
You could be like,
you like, there's a difference also too between idolizing or demonizing with that sense rather than just
Also just omit it and put his skeleton next to say a female's and this have it like how the Whale Museum has it, where you can they put like a wood of the fin over the bones so you can see what it looks like on the inside, because their fin bones look like hands and see how big it was, because
because it's hard to compare. See, it looks like kind of puny.
Is huge.
No, that's a really good idea. That would have been interesting. No, I think that is definitely like, I mean, if the, you know, if zoos and aquariums and things like that are moving in the direction of conservation, obviously education is important. And like, I think that is a good idea to, you know, because I feel like it's really hard with any animal, but I can imagine, especially a whale, to get a complete skeleton. So that would be really fascinating to get a complete skeleton.
Yeah, they could even like donate them. Like they're from, like Tillicum's from Iceland. What if an Iceland museum wanted it and they could then go display it there? Or like maybe when Tokite dies, they could give her bones back at the very least, and the Lummi Nation could decide what is done
with them. Yeah.
That kind of thing. Because there are other Southern residents on display. There are a lot of Southern residents on display.
You just made a whole post
all
about
over.
It.
I do.
Yeah.
You need to go see more.
Yeah. Look at that. Yes.
Check out the Breaching Extinction Instagram.
Check it out.
Shameless plug.
Yes. Shameless plug on our own podcast.
Yeah. That was my weird. That's just saying. I think it's cool when there are skeletons put on display.
Absolutely. No, I think so too. That's a really unique like learning opportunity. And then you truly get a size, because I feel like even if you do see the animal in the wild, whether it's from land or from a boat, it's a whole other thing to stand next to a skeleton and like be like, yep, you're really this large.
Particularly too, for like the people that are around, it's very rare, I would say, and this is just as somebody who's like, I moved to the Pacific Northwest 5 years ago, and there's still only so many whales that I've seen that I would have a connection enough to be able to see them, like see a skeleton and have that be an emotional response. For people that are around and actively like involved with these whales, whether that be whale watching or indigenous nations or otherwise, like it's a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Like
in more than just a scientific manner.
Yeah, no, that's like definitely another important point to pick out the words are coming out of my mouth weird. No, that's an important point to bring up. I mean, there is such like, that is one of, I think, the biggest themes that I've seen throughout just the Southern resident conservation story in general, is like emotion and connection. And so many people are able to form a connection either through seeing them or like hearing about them through their friends or like whatever their, you know, way of connecting with them is. But there's, it sounds like there's quite a few people that would have known Rhapsody and that would be really hard to see. I can imagine, I'm trying to think of like we have specific whales here. And if it was like one of my, like, you know, Halo or Angel or like Luke Skywalker or Google, oh man, if it was Google skeleton, I don't think I could do it. I love that derpy little whale. So yeah, I completely understand that. But that's, definitely. I mean, it's wild how like it's not, I was just talking to my friend about like kind of, he's a global studies major, I think is the name of his major. But like he was talking about how in his discipline, like you have to look at all angles, like social, economic, political, and like you can't just look at things through one angle. And I feel like this is a prime example of that, of like it's not just like, oh cool, science, you know, it's like an emotional connection or like having cultural significance to, you know, the indigenous people.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely.
Nice. Yeah. So what were the conservation takeaways? I saw some pictures from Kendra, so I kind of have a little like understanding, but I would like you to go into it more. Kendra's.
You want me to? Okay. I was going to say,
you have the most feelings on this one.
I didn't know if Fred wanted to like preface it. Okay, let me pull up the pictures because I got to look at the actual numbers that.
So while you're pulling those up. So when you walk in, basically you see there's like a center thing, like a little circle. There's, I think, three different kind of shelving units like within glass, and it's all like ghost fishing gear and pollution, and like that the pollution is like the biggest drive that they push with regard to stuff. And it's not just with regard to the chemicals that are being put in the water, it's to with regard to like the actual tangible pollution that exists. Which makes sense because it is a massive problem, but for killer whales themselves, especially in the Pacific Northwest, it's interesting that that's the one that they kind of hammered home. Even on the all the stuff around, it was a lot of talk about, if I remember correctly, like gear that's lost and things that have amalgamated in the sea in general. Over time, Kendra, you can speak to this, I think, better than I, because I cannot remember too many things about either food or like there was one thing about noise. I remember that for sure. There was like one poster, I think, that explained like the impacts of fishing vessels or otherwise with regard to echolocation. But I don't remember much about the depletion of at least salmon.
Yeah. Like, so like fish. Food was mentioned occasionally in passing on other posters. It wasn't mentioned on Rhapsody's, which is technically not a lie because she didn't die from starvation. She was malnourished when she died, but she died because the calf got stuck in her uterus and died, and then it got stinky and rotty. And anyway, I don't know why I said those words, I'm so sorry, but yeah, basically the calf, I can't remember the official term for it, but the calf died. It created like an infection, essentially the rotting flesh inside of her, and it then killed her. She wasn't able to pass the baby. So they didn't mention her malnourished state, even though that was recorded in the official necropsies by Center for World Research and others. They did mention some of her teeth were stolen, so it's fine. I think then in the concert, so you walk into after you leave the captivity room, you walk into the conservation room. Like Fred said, there are like these three circular panels that have like doorways in them. Yeah. Those have pollution on them, and they each have a poster about a different whale on them. One whale is Scarlet, one whale is Luna, one whale is Morgan. Morgan's not even whatever. Morgan is a Norwegian.
Wait, Morgan's not even whatever. What does that mean?
Is a Norwegian whale.
Morgan's a Norwegian whale that's in captivity.
In captivity. That All ties right. into like the tiny corner where they have more stuff about her, but whatever. Okay. So there's Scarlet and Luna, J51. And did Luna have a what was Luna's nomenclature?
Luna, I don't like, just Luna was an L pod.
L something.
Yeah.
In Scarlet's, they have to acknowledge that she had peanut head and was therefore malnourished. That was recognized. To the sides of this room, because this circle in the middle is now in a square room, there is a poster about noise, and there's a beautiful, beautiful, it's a sad, beautiful picture of a killer whale passing in front of a big old cargo ship. And they just talk about orcas and sound. Next to that is a picture of Corky and her trainer at SeaWorld San Diego, and it talks about captivity again. Next to that is the Morgan room. On the side of that wall is another big poster, I want to say, about captivity again. A wood art piece, like indigenous art piece, that has like a killer whale and a raven and stuff on it. And then there is a wall with just more photography. Luna L 98. Okay. And then there's like a replica of a killer whale skull. And then in the middle of the circles, there is this diorama table where you like move around resources and it shows you the impact it has. So like you can remove you can remove a dam and it shows you like what that would do. Then you can remove boats. You can remove, what are the other ones?
That is cool.
It is cool, but it's like just this one little table. It's cool. No, it is cool.
Yeah.
But it's like, you kind of got like, if someone's taking it, you don't play it and no one like learns anything. On the insides of these circular panels are also posters. There's one again about noise, and it talks about the ECHO program, which is about lowering vessel noise. And UBC is a part of it. The Trans Mountain Pipeline is part of it. Van Aqua is a part of it. A lot of people are a part of it. There are some names on there that if you're kind of like, oh,
why are you there?
Interesting.
What are you doing?
And the other ones I think are there. Then there is a, sorry you guys, I'm really explaining the exhibit so you like understand.
No, give us the full picture. We love.
Then there is a tablet where it has you take like a takeaway quiz as to like what you learned from the exhibit. And it's mostly like for them, like you get percentages, ask you questions like what is threatening? Blah, 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 blah. And so for one question, it was asking what can we do to like help orcas? And the options were take climate change and tackle climate change and ocean pollution, reduce sound pollution from ships, and make sure orcas have enough prey.
Okay.
Those are the three options.
All the above, but yeah.
73% of people after walking through this exhibit picked tackle climate change and ocean pollution. 14% said reduce sound pollution from ships, and 13% said make sure orcas have enough prey. There's more. There's at the very end, it asks what you're going to commit to do to help the orcas in the Salish Sea specifically, but orcas in general. At 34%, people voted cut down on single-use disposable plastics by using my own to-go cup. Second is 24%. Learn more about climate change and how it impacts the ocean and affects all of our lives. Again, both of these are noble causes. In third place at 15%, eat only certified sustainable seafood. Again, noble cause. At 12%, donate time or money to an environmental organization that I believe in. At 8%, reach out to politicians where I live and let them know I support the protection of orcas in the ocean. And then 7 said they're not ready to take a pledge. So the lowest was reaching out to politicians, which is kind of like the primary thing a lot of us
focus on, ask
people to do. And you know what? Pollution and climate change are awful. They're a huge crisis. I've seen plastic pollution an insane amount firsthand. But that is not the issue, the primary predominant issue that the Southern residents, who are a main focus of this exhibit, though all orcas are touched on, all of their physical examples of killer whales are of Southern residents. Mm-hmm. All of the personal stories they are saying about specific killer whales, except for Morgan, are Southern residents. They are the primary focus of the exhibit, and most people take away climate change. Again, climate change, take act, do it. It's bad. Take action. But that is not what is killing these whales. And as you leave the exhibit, there is a sign that says, "Our shared future. Orcas need clean, quiet oceans and pollution-free food. What about you?"
I think they need regular food. Like, I think even at this point, if we fed them polluted food, it would be better than pollution, than being like, they specifically need, not saying that we should go give them polluted food, but like, I'm just like any food at this point that they're willing to eat. I'm just curious. I had some conversations this weekend with people, whale people, and like, it's weird because to a lot of us, it seems, those of us who are like, you know, whale people that are just super into whales, whatever, like, very obvious that the food is it. Like, when you look at the science, the food, like, not, it's all it, all of it is it. Fucking take whatever it is that you are passionate about and run with it. Like, do whatever it is that you can do to help the environment. But, you know, no, it's definitely the food situation. And it makes me wonder why there's a different understanding. I think, you know, leading with the benefit of the doubt of like, maybe that's just like somebody, I don't know.
I think a big reason is that it's easier. I think the second reason is the dams are very political, and in the States, this is an exhibit in, well, not Washington, dear goodness, in British Columbia. Sure. And so the dams are a US issue. As much as people like send letters and make phone calls to the States, it's a US problem. Past that, it's fisheries, which I don't think they're gonna drag all too much besides only sustainable. And again, someone asked who funded the exhibit. I haven't looked into who's funding it, but they also are not going to shine on the Trans Mountain Pipeline, because that's a big issue, and tanker traffic and cargo ship traffic, because that's also political. And so, it's in their benefit to take a neutral stance that is universally an enemy, which would be plastic and climate change.
Okay. So, all right.
Not saying I like that, but that's like the reasoning I can give the exhibit. Okay.
I can see where you're coming from. I can see that being a potential. Obviously, we have not talked to anybody who like did these exhibits. These are all theories. These are our thoughts based on our knowledge of the situation and everything else.
And working with other organizations, even organizations around Southern residents, don't take stances on the dams.
So yeah, okay. So that's
NOAA recognizes the food is the problem. They don't really say much about the dams.
So this is the thing. So my first thought is always give people the benefit of the doubt. There potentially is like some sort of like misunderstanding, or like maybe like somebody like truly did their best and like genuinely that's what they think, you know, and maybe aren't, you know, be open to maybe our understanding is not as accurate or something, you know. And then, you know, my second thought goes to, you know, even though it isn't necessarily correct, is this a bad thing? And I don't think we need to necessarily label anything as good or bad only. I think there's positives and negatives to everything. So it's like, it's positive to get people to think about climate change, and we totally should be thinking about that 100%.
Well, it's positive to show people like what plastic pollution looks like too. Like real life, because I haven't seen anything here. Like beaches are not nearly as dirty, which is still something I'm getting used to. That sounds bad. but like they're not that bad, and so people don't really believe plastic pollution is a big problem or fishnet or
it's hard to believe gear. Anything when you don't see it.
100%. Yeah,
true. So like that's good. I like seeing it. I'm like, oh cool, people are like, oh, that was in the ocean, what the heck. But again, that's not no southern resident to my knowledge has been directly killed from plastic pollution
alone. Yeah,
they're heavily polluted animals.
True.
Even with the heavy pollution, though, that's not with regard to the plastic or like
it wasn't necessarily plastic.
Like it's that's not what they're getting polluted with. Chemical pollution. Yeah. So then another part of that, though, and this is just something to add to all of the things that have already been said, but I don't know who we don't know who funded it.
True.
But and from what I understand, the Royal BC Museum is a government museum. Like it's funded through the federal government at least the provincial government of BC. And so like with that, like if they promote something or if they have something at the museum that is like politically driven, let's say, or like has something to do with the United States, like that in my head, it would make them even more wary to put something out to that degree that a private museum might not have. The same degree of,
for sure,
like the whale museum.
Yeah, no, like you put this exhibit
and
there.
It's going to be a traveling exhibit, so they may have just really tried to make the most neutral takeaway.
So okay,
I still think it's not the it's misleading as to what is
it is misleading and killing. That's the thing, because at first I was like, okay, well, like, is this such a bad thing? Because if we get people to understand or think about climate change or ocean pollution, but like it is it. Like it's not bad to, it's good for people to know those things, but it is, you know, it's not incorrect, but it's not the most correct at the same time. There are more correct final answers. I like can see both sides of wanting to stay politically neutral, because like obviously, like, you know, you do have to be strategic with your goals, and we can't, as much as we want to, go into every situation guns ablazing, being like, you know, let's do something about this, like it's a balance too of like it needing to be addressed. Like they could have maybe sprinkled in the dams or the pipeline, you know, sprinkled little things in here or there. It's frustrating because I mean, as a public resource, if that's what that place is, I think it should have all of the accurate information. But of course, like we know that, like, you know, we're public, you know, isn't necessarily like they have to be strategic. I don't know. It's just frustrating. We don't know the situation as to why it's like that, but it's just like that's one of the things, like a lot of people like just shit all over NOAA. Like a lot of whale watching people in the San Juans just really have negative feelings about NOAA. And I completely can see where they come from, because, you know, of all the issues, the whale watching has definitely been hit the hardest. And while it is an issue and it does need to be addressed, it's not like it shouldn't be a, like the spotlight thing, you know. No,
it's been used as a scapegoat.
It's a scapegoat for sure. Like, and I totally
think NOAA does awesome research, but again,
and so I understand
you could research whales all you want, but they're gonna die. And then what?
You're gonna research their death. That's
so. The thing that we all need to have is integrity, which is hard as shit to have. It is not an easy thing to be able to stand up in the face of what is right based on, and what we think is right is based on the science, you know? And so I see the frustration with NOAA of getting targeted, but at the same time, NOAA does a lot of our understanding is because of NOAA. So it's just like, it's really frustrating. And I see there's a lot of political avenues and things like that, but it's like, you know, I'm like, is it a money thing? Is it an ego thing? Or is it like, that people just suck at having difficult conversations that make other people uncomfortable? And also it is really hard to like, it's exhausting to try to fight for what's right and try to have conversations with people that don't understand, especially I'm sure if you're in a high stakes room or in a high stakes, you know, relationship where it is like maybe political, like, you know, you're a scientist talking to a politician. Like I can see that. It just like, and I'm not saying that these people don't have integrity. It's a really hard thing to have, but I think it's something that we can all slowly work towards having more of, because like what's the point of researching all this if we're not going to do anything about it? What's the point of sharing this information with people on boats if we're not going to do anything about it, you know?
I think less of it as an integrity thing, but my critique of the the exhibit is you don't have to give a solution to the salmon problem for people directly, but you could mention it a lot more. Because like you, the thing for me, like you look at photos of the whales that are malnourished with peanut head, like they have a photo of Scarlet, mm-hmm. and they opt out of saying Rhapsody was malnourished and underweight. And it's like, it's clearly a problem. And if you don't have to say breach the dams in your exhibit, but you can right. do a lot more to tell people they're starving, and then people can leave the exhibit and look it up, and then they can find the action. And that's the thing. You don't have to give them the final solution as to whatever you think that may be, right. whether it's shutting down fisheries, whether it's la 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 la, all that. That the more political stuff, fish farms are political, fishing is political, dams are political. That's genuinely a political issue. I understand that.
Yeah.
But you can do more. You can show. I'd be all for just put up the pictures of whales with peanut heads, put them in a little room, put a little trick, content warning, whatever, and be like, look, this is literally what's happening.
Not only that, but once you do that, it gives anybody that comes and visits actual ownership over whatever they do next. Right? Because if you go and you look and all of a sudden you realize that this is an issue going on, and then you decide your avenue to go about like researching and understanding the effects that like prey availability has on the population. Mm-hmm. Like I everything that I've found that I have found myself, I've like felt better about. Like, yeah. like you don't feel like you're being told. You feel like you are, yeah. are like actively a part of like figuring out the problem.
For sure. And like, you know, yeah, some people take the initiative, some people won't.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think that's a good idea.
Give them the option.
It's
and the genuine facts going on behind the scenes. They're not dying because of plastic, and the climate change impacts salmon. So yes, climate change is impacting the southern resident killer whales. But those are like, what is the word? I don't even know, like a straw man. I don't even know what to call them. They're not the real problem, and they're being put up.
Okay, they're a real problem. They're not the main.
They're real problems. They're not, but yeah. we're talking about specifically for southern residents and yeah. what's directly, primarily impacting their population decrease.
Like if we're gonna rank them, it's not.
If we're gonna rank them, I would say 9.5 out of 10 people are gonna say it's salmon. It's prey yeah. availability. Which yeah. climate change impacts prey availability, because in the rivers, even the like, because we have so many cut off from dams. Beside that, in other rivers they are very hot, and that is subsequently killing salmon and not giving right. them good grounds. So yes, that is a problem, obviously,
for sure.
And plastics have been found in southern resident poop. Okay, it's they're both issues. But so they're not completely invalid, and they're still very important. But specifically, when you let people walk away just thinking they needed only like the only solution for food is sustainable seafood, that's the only thing they can do about the prey availability problem. That's not honest.
How much do you know about bites? Everything? Perfect. Nothing at all? Even better. At the UBC Bike Kitchen, you can use our space and tools to do your own bike maintenance, get one-on-one instruction on how to fix your bike yourself, or drop your bike off for us to repair. You can also buy a fully refurbished, guaranteed used bicycle, or a variety of new and used parts and accessories. The Bike Kitchen is UBC's nonprofit, student-owned, full-service bike shop. We're located in the basement of the Student Union Building. Just look for the stairwell on the north side of the sub across from Gage Towers, or search for the UBC Bike Kitchen on Facebook. Stop by the Bike Kitchen and then get riding.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theater, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theater, visit their website at www.riotheater.ca.
Anthropology displays long-term and visiting exhibits of indigenous art from around the world, and guided tours are free. Our permanent collection features one of the world's finest exhibits of Northwest Coast First Nations art. Our collection includes 36,000 ethnographic pieces, 535,000 archaeological pieces, and over 600 pieces in the Kroner Ceramics Gallery. There's a lot to take in. Luckily, at the Museum of Anthropology, final exams are always take-home. If you've never checked out this world-class facility, now's your chance. The Museum of Anthropology is located right on campus and free for all UBC students and faculty. Come enjoy our collection and resources.
But yeah. Fred, you pulled out the book. What's in the book?
So I was looking at the book just to see if... So for those of you who what don't book? Know, there's a book that's called Spirits of the Coast.
I have that over here too.
It's tied with the exhibit.
Yeah, so it was built explicitly, or it was created explicitly to go along with the exhibit.
That's so cool.
So like if you look at the center, you guys can't see, but I'm showing Eric and Kendra's like Royal BC Museum on it. I just wanted to see if they had anything about like take action here. And from everything that I can see, it's not. They focus on connection.
It's another, yeah, it's another like vague workup book. Yeah.
This one is, I think it's more storytelling than anything else. And I think it's a, like, I think it's heavily focused in terms of Indigenous tradition as well. And they're trying to get a lot of the stories.
It has a good captivity section.
Explained. I haven't read it through yet. I'm very excited to, because they've got some pretty...
Emma has a photo in there.
Solid through. Does she really?
What? Emma, look. Yeah, her picture's in the back.
Queen. Can you?
She was going to go to the exhibit when it first came out, but COVID, so.
That's too bad.
Darn Omicron. But it.
Like, well, this was OG COVID. This was like OG COVID. Yeah, this wasn't recent COVID. This was OG COVID that got them.
Older.
That didn't let them go to the exhibit when it first opened, or when it was supposed to first open, because then COVID. So.
Freaking the rip.
Oh, that's cute.
Freaking COVID, man. Ruining everything.
I'm going to be looking for it now.
Yeah, definitely look for it. Wait, I feel like I have the same book. Is it like a coffee table type book?
Yep. Yeah, like a big square.
Yes, that's the one. I have it. Sits on my little stool over there. Yes.
And that was another cool thing too about the Indigenous section of the exhibit, because I think some of it was made explicitly for the exhibit too. Just like,
yeah, the mask was, yeah, they were
masks
a lot
made.
Of it
I'm pretty
was,
sure this one, like the inside cover was one of the main pieces that was in like the very end of the Indigenous exhibit.
Yeah, a lot of them were like I don't know if commission is, I think, for the exhibit and then to travel with the exhibit. That's so I think the mask, the big one in there, I'm pretty sure that was like, I don't know how to lay it up, but there was a big mask in there. That one I'm pretty sure was commissioned. They have videos also about it on the Royal BC Museum website. They have videos about like the Indigenous artists that made them, about creating the exhibit, and like when they were making like ruffles, the big ruffles diorama, like making him, all that kind of stuff.
That's cool. Gonna be really interesting as a museum, especially to like, I've seen comedians and political talks all the same about like certain qualms with museums and like around the States and in England that have artifacts from places where they just took them
that
from
steal. Yeah, the stolen artifacts.
Yeah. So this is a very interesting take on like ways to incorporate knowledge, tradition, and culture like well with Indigenous communities.
Yeah,
because like it's one of the first places that I haven't gone to many museums.
It's collaborative. It's
but it is,
we want to showcase part of this culture that is a part of this animal, that is a part of this coast. We want to pay you / if anyone wants to donate. I don't know if any of them were donated. I know some were commissioned, but like that's another thing. People could donate now to exhibits instead of big colonial structures being like mine.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's a good thing to want to mine.
So we don't get the first scene from Black Panther where they go in and they like take the stuff. I love that scene in the first Black Panther movie.
I haven't seen it in a long time.
Is there a second one?
I mean, there's going to be a second one. Then he's in other movies. But yeah, it starts out with Michael Jordan's character, Michael B. Jordan. Nice. Jordan's character going to the museum and talking about how everything there is stolen. So he's going to take something back. He also kills someone. So
that was a really good movie.
I was like, you killed someone. And you're very clearly the villain of the story. But I really like this move you have right here. This was true. Yes.
This was a good move.
This is commentary.
Yeah.
The best villains are the ones that you can look at and be like, I understand where you're coming from, not what you're doing, but where you're coming from.
I don't know. I think the Joker is a pretty good villain, and he has absolutely no background, like moral grounding. He's just psycho.
That's a fun villain.
Oh, okay.
Like explicitly, like Jordan B's character's like his character in the movie was like, I don't want to say redeemable, but
understandable.
Yeah.
Sympathetic. It's one of those like you went really hard on the idea and it took you the wrong route.
Yes.
For sure.
Kind of a thing.
Yeah. Whereas you look at like Heath Ledger's Joker and you can't help but be amazed at how mindlessly mindfully cruel one could be.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, museums. Ooh.
Museum villains ganging. We love it. Do you guys know how much longer it's going to be there and where it's going next by chance?
March 31st.
Yeah, end of March.
That's how Fred's like, I know.
Yeah, end of March. I don't think they've said where it's going next yet, but I've just heard that it's going to be a traveling exhibit.
That's pretty cool.
So.
Well, so go see it. If you live in Canada, go check it out.
Yeah, or if you come visit.
Or if you come visit Canada.
I hope that they bring it to the States. I think they may, if they did, I wonder if they'd change any of like the Canadian focused anecdotes. Like if they do like a captivity mural wall, if they would then include the US facilities, not just Sealand of the Pacific and like marine land.
Vancouver Aquarium.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting. Well, maybe they will. That would be cool. Well, I appreciate you guys sharing your thoughts on this and your experience. Do you guys have any final thoughts?
It was a dream.
It was a great exhibit. I hope none of this gave off the impression that it's not worth it or that it's bad, because it's not. I've been 3 times, so I really hope that's not.
I think it's like, I definitely, when we were like talking about it, I was like, oh my God, I feel like I'm being too harsh for something I haven't even seen. But I mean, I think that difficult conversations are important, and it's important to be like a critical thinker, right? And discuss these issues. Cause like, if you don't discuss things, then the world just like continues as it is. And this is kind of like not that serious of a situation, but you know, I feel like you get the gist of what I'm trying to say.
Who like, we are the greatest critics of the things that we love the most.
For sure. Yeah.
And so like being able to walk into this and like see it and see everything that is great and be able to like look at it with that eye is a really nice thing.
Yeah.
I will also say it's super impressive that it takes a very brunt a force, like I don't know what to say. It takes a very blunt interaction with captivity. Whereas I think a lot of places still tiptoe that and they're just like, it was bad. Here's exclusive footage that we have found of the capture process and people who said it was awful to watch and that whales died and all these whales, like they're still in captivity and it's still bad. La la la. Like they was very upfront about that, which I was like, whoa, wow.
And that's definitely a positive thing. And I definitely don't want to like, I feel like we didn't, but I don't want to come across as like, just like a nitpicky whale person that's like ready to jump on anyone that does the wrong thing. And because like they didn't do quote unquote the wrong thing, they just did it in a way that we don't think is as accurate in the end conclusion, but overall it sounds like a really awesome thing to go experience and like it's worth it, so everyone should go check it out.
And if you can't go check it out, do the virtual tour. I'm pretty sure they have everything
they
on
do.
There.
They have, you can pay tour. For like a $10 virtual tour.
What?
I'm pretty sure it's run by Mark Leran Young, who wrote the, like he's written a bunch of books, but I know he wrote The Killer Whale Who Changed the World about Moby Dall. He has a podcast called Skana, and I'm pretty sure he runs some of the virtual like tours as well.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely do that. But
at the end of the day, definitely worth it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And everyone, like we all pretty much, I think most of us again agree on the prey availability being the main issue, but there are still people in this community that don't have an issue with the dams and believe other things. So to them, I bet they're
maybe.
I would wonder, it'd be cool if people who have varying viewpoints on the primary issues of Southern residents and what the solution should be went through the exhibit and what everyone had to say.
Mm-hmm. Like, cool to see.
I think that'd be cool to see what how they react to certain messages.
If you are listening to this podcast and you do not think that the dams are an issue, I think we would all love to hear your perspective. Like, genuinely listen, not be like,
yeah, not in like a, we're
gonna, I'm gonna attack you, I hate you way, because it's not the facts. I just like genuinely want to understand.
Yeah, I've heard about people that don't oppose the dams, but I've yet to interact with someone that is like a genuine conservationist in that sense, and not just like someone in Idaho who loves the dams. That
this is like the first I'm really hearing of this, because you were like, these people exist, and I was like, where in my brain? That's what I was thinking. But yeah, I would love to, genuinely would love to hear your perspective. If you'd like to come on the podcast, this is an open invitation to email me at erica@breachingextinction.com or message the Instagram or something, because all perspectives are valued, and even if we disagree on things, it's still important to like find the things that we do agree on and like work towards what we can work on together.
Yeah,
because if we're just fighting each other and being nasty, we're not gonna get anything done.
Well, and if there's a group of people that don't want to take down the dams but want to help Southern residents, what's the route to give them? Because a lot of us are focused on the dam. So if someone comes on and is like, I support the dams, but there are still this and this people can do, that can be a good way for those people to get involved.
Come on, I would love to. Like, I think that that's a really good option, because like, we definitely need to include people of varying perspectives. So please, like, genuinely please reach out. If you're not comfortable being on the podcast, like, you could even just like anonymously mail me a letter to my PO box on the website, and I'll just read it. You don't even have to put your name on it, and I'll just like be like, wow. Cause I know some people, I think part of the reason maybe why I haven't heard of this, or maybe people don't voice it as much, is because I think that in the whale world, people tend to jump down each other's throats real fast. So I would love, I'd like genuinely have an open conversation and hear about it and what other solutions you have for helping. Because any help,
place to have the conversation to be here.
Yeah, any help is good. All help is good. So help in all the ways that you're genuinely helping. Gang, gang.
Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. Goodbye. Have a good day.
Thank you for listening. Indeed, I am so grateful to have been able to go to this exhibit in its premier place at the BC Rural Museum. It's one of my favorite things that I've done in the past year. Second only to slipping into False Creek during late July. So for this special Monday, we're going to finish out with two songs. And the only thing I have to say before they go is that I love Tiny Donuts.
Yeah, 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 yeah. She's a queen, the realest one anyone ever seen. And if it turns out I'm asleep, then don't wake me up from this dream. I mean, if I'm keeping it real about how we came to be, I ain't do nothing to deserve you, but I keep you by any means. Because nobody's like you, nobody can compare to that shine inside of your eyes. And that way you play with your hair, it's the way you keep it 100. I trusted you with my heart, could've torn me to pieces, but had my back when I started. Makes me sick to imagine you without me by your side. No other person can give you half of this love I can't provide. I'm passionate about your happiness. If I need to remind you the rationale for my madness, I'm happy to tell you why. Cause I see what you do when you're not thinking. I'd be a damn fool if I let you slip. Yeah, if I let you slip out my grip. And I'm never trying to control you, but I can't take that risk. Not with this once in a lifetime. Sports and a front time. I save a lifeline, right place and right time. And I'm unworthy of your treasure, but I'm working under this pressure to keep you here forever. Cause you're rock solid, definition of loyal, elegant, empathetic, and enigmatically royal. You get on my damn nerves, bring my blood to a boil. But your heart is where my home is, your soul exists in my soil. I got deep feelings for you, I'm not afraid to show it. We've been nurturing this love we were searching for, so let's grow it. We were meant to be together forever, we both know it. If this is my chance at being your lover, I'm not gonna blow it. Cause I see what you do when you're not thinking. I'd be a damn fool if I let you slip. If I let you slip out my grip. And I'm never trying to control you, but I can't take that risk. Not with this once in a lifetime. Sports and a fight, I save a lifeline, right place and right time. And I'm unworthy of your treasure, but I'm working under this pressure to keep you with forever. Cause I see What you do when you're not thinking, I'd be a damn fool if I let you slip. Yeah. Slip out my grip and I'm never trying to control you, but I can't take that risk, not with this. No, yeah. No, I can't take that risk, not when I see what you do when you're not thinking, I'd be a damn fool, cause you got me straight up hooked. Feeling after your love, sense of humor and empathy, kindness, all the above. Girl, you the total package, you got every box checked. But it's the way you treat others that really got my respect. Don't get me wrong, girl, you're the bomb and I couldn't settle for less. But it's that muscle in your chest that truly got me possessed. I got your heart inside my hand and I'm holding a firm grip. Nobody like you even close, so I'm never gonna let you slip. Cause I see what you do when you're not thinking, I'd be a damn fool if I let you slip, yeah. Slip out my grip and I'm never trying to control you, but I can't take that risk, not with this, no. No, I can't take that risk, not when I see what you do when you're not thinking, I'd be a damn fool if I let you slip.
Lay your bare chest on mine and feel the beat of our hearts collide. Place your palm over mine and as the sun rises, you'll find when the last leaf drops in winter time. And the best of your dreams cannot grow. I'll wrap you in my gentle arms and squeeze you tight. When the breeze of the cold kiss the freckles on your nose, I'll keep you dry. Dance with me through the night. Beneath the stars I see shine through your eyes. Lay me bare around the fire. You will always be my heart's desire. When the last leaf drops in winter time and the best of your dreams cannot grow, I'll wrap you in gentle arms and squeeze you tight. When the breeze of the cold kiss the freckles on your nose, I'll keep you dry. I'll keep you dry when the midnight rain arrives and the thunder's all over. I keep you dry when you're feeling hollow in your bones. If the dooms of life knock on your door and you feel as though you're done for sure, hold my hands and you will be alright. I will comfort you and keep you dry. When the last leaf drops in winter time and the best of your dreams cannot grow, I'll wrap you in my gentle arms and squeeze you tight. When the breeze of the cold kiss the freckles on your nose, I'll keep you dry.
I'm the Jocelyn Pettifan, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
They cannot get on my level, nah.
noisy as fuck on the level up. You cannot get on my level now. You can try, but you won't level up. They cannot.